Flutie's famous Hail Mary wouldn't have been legal in the early days of football. Throwing the ball down the field was expressly forbidden. The story of how that rule changed involves the 26th president of the United States and 250,000 cubic feet of concrete. Here's Only a Game's Karen Gibbon.
Harvard Stadium has a jumbotron, cheerleaders, and a whole section for the cooler-than-cool pep band. But other than that, it doesn't look like any other sporting venue in the world. Well, there is this one place.
The idea was to model it after the Roman Colosseum. That was what the architect submitted, and that was approved.
That's Dick Friedman. He's a former editor at Sports Illustrated and a proud Harvard alum.
For people back then, they had never seen anything like it. I mean, it was like being on the moon.
Harvard Stadium was the first permanent structure built for the game of football, and at the time, the largest steel-reinforced concrete building in the world. It's shaped like a horseshoe, with Roman arches lining the outside walls and Greek columns on the inside. When the stadium opened in November of 1903, Harvard had already won three national championships. They'd win four more by 1919. And Harvard Stadium would be packed. At times, more than 50,000 people walked into the stadium on a Saturday afternoon. More than a century later, fans still climb narrow stairs to sit on the stadium's long, curved concrete benches.
What you see is what you saw back in 1903, with a few little touches here and there. But this is the original.
But while Harvard Stadium hasn't changed much since 1903, the game of football has. Dick Friedman spent a lot of time studying it.
You look at the photos of the line of scrimmage and you see 20 guys squashed in and then a couple of guys standing in back.
On nearly every play, these two masses of men would smash into each other in a cloud of dust.
Once in a while, somebody would break through with a long run, but essentially they would be gaining a few yards at a time.
Most of the excitement and the points came from the kicking game. Touchdowns were rare.
Because the defense could bunch up right in front of the goal line and didn't have to worry about a pass going over their heads and didn't have to spread out.
So when two very good teams played against each other,
you had a lot of scoreless ties. And a lot of the more astute commentators back then said that unless there was a way to get scoring higher, that the game would die of boredom and not of violence.
Which is saying something, because on October 15th, 1905, the Washington Post reported that at least 45 football players had died since the turn of the century. The newspaper said, quote, "Picked up unconscious from beneath the mass of other players, it was generally found that the victim had been kicked in the head or stomach so as to cause internal injuries or concussion of the brain, which, sooner or later, ended life." Then there were the lesser injuries. Here's sports historian Ronald A. Smith.
Broken collarbones were very common. Broken fingers were common. It was a brutal game.
Muckrakers focused on that brutality. They wanted football banned. In response, Friedman says coaches and university administrators began looking for ways to make the game safer.
And one of the ways that they came up with and actually made a lot of sense was to widen the field.
The theory was, with a wider field, players couldn't just stand shoulder to shoulder on the line of scrimmage. The defense would have to spread out to cover a ball carrier who ran straight for the sideline before heading down the field. There was just one problem with this plan.
One huge, immovable problem. Quite literally, it was set in stone. You could not widen the field within Harvard Stadium.
But there was another way to force the defense to spread out, the forward pass. Smith says it wasn't an entirely new idea.
People probably have heard of John Heisman.
John Heisman was a football player and coach. The Heisman Trophy is named after him.
John Heisman had recommended the forward pass, but the person who most hated the forward pass was Walter Camp of Yale.
Walter Camp is often called the father of American football. He had almost complete control over the rules committee, and he had no interest in even considering the forward pass.
It was making the game less tough.
But Walter Camp had his chance to reform football. That came when he was summoned to the White House in October of 1905 by President and Harvard football fan Teddy Roosevelt.
He called Harvard, Yale, and Princeton down to the White House to discuss the unethical play that was going on and the brutality that was going on.
Roosevelt told the men that it was their responsibility to lead the way in making the game safer, because where they led, the lesser schools would follow.
In other words, this kind of a trickle-down Reagan philosophy.
I know this will come as a shock, but the trickle-down theory didn't work. On the train back to their respective schools, the representatives considered some rules changes, but decided instead to issue a joint statement, pledging to tame the ills of the game and urging other schools to follow. But nothing much changed. And then on October 21st, 1905, in a game against New York University, a player for Union College was struck in the head, probably by the knee of one of his teammates. By the time the official blew his whistle, players had piled up on the ball. The Union College player was at the bottom, face down and unconscious. He died hours later. Henry McCracken, the chancellor of NYU, decided he'd had enough.
Henry McCracken called a meeting of all the schools that New York University played against over the last 10 years.
McCracken hoped the attendees of this meeting would vote to ban football. Instead, they decided to reform it. Meanwhile, schools across the country were dropping the sport, saying that it was just too violent. Even at Harvard, one of the school's two governing boards called for the game to be banned, much to the dismay of Harvard's young coach, Bill Reed.
Reed heard that they might be doing this, and so he asked the Harvard Athletic Association to set up a committee to reform intercollegiate athletics. This group comes up with 19 suggestions.
One of those suggestions was the forward pass. Instead of bringing his list to the old rules committee, the one dominated by the forward pass-hating Walter Camp, Reed brought it to McCracken's group.
And Reed tells this new rules committee, he says, if we don't get these 19 rules passed, Harvard is going to vote football out.
McCracken's committee agreed to Harvard's demand to institute the forward pass, and Harvard agreed to join them in reforming the game.
And when Harvard moved over, Yale and Princeton almost had to do, and so they jointly came up with rules.
You know, I think a little bit is more is made of this split schism.
Again, Dick Friedman.
It's not the Catholic Church in the 1400s, you know, I mean, that kind of thing. Eventually, everybody had to be on board with the forward pass, and they were.
Eventually, the threat of the forward pass worked to help spread out the defense and open up the game. But under the 1906 rules, only a fool would actually try to use it.
Pass interference was legal. You know, a guy could be running out to try to catch the pass, and you could do anything to him. You could mug him.
If the receiver dropped the ball, the offense would be penalized 15 yards. If the ball fell to the ground without anyone touching it, the team would lose possession.
It took a few years for these rules to work themselves out. But none of this would have happened if Harvard Stadium could have been wider.
Are you sure?
It probably wouldn't have happened. I don't know. Eventually somebody would have said, hey, maybe we should be throwing the ball forward. You know, it could be fun.
That's writer Dick Friedman speaking with Only a Game's Karen Given. Friedman's forthcoming book is called The Coach Who Strangled a Bulldog, How Harvard's Percy Haughton Tamed Yale and Reinvented Football.